Today on Straight Talk Africa, democracy is a huge winner in Burkina Faso. But is the election of Roch Kabore continuing a trend on social justice and accountability in Africa? Or is it an exception to the rule on the continent? That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. It's Wednesday, December 9th. I am Shaka Sali.
Well, happy Wednesday to you, Shaka, and hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Mariama Diallo, your social media reporter.
Today, we'll talk about the outcome of the recent election in Burkina Faso and examine whether it could be a blueprint for Pan-African reform.
And coming up later in our STA inbox, we'll share your thoughts on the topic du jour through your emails, tweets, and Facebook comments. Hope you'll stay with us.
And thanks, Mariama. But first, what does the first ever transparent and credible election in Burkina Faso suggest for other nations heading to the polls, especially for African leaders seeking to shift the constitutional goalposts in order to stay in State House? My colleague, Paul Sisko, has more.
Roch Kabore convincingly won the presidential election on the first and therefore only ballot. But the first truly free and open poll in Burkina Faso has not come easily. Originally scheduled for last month, it was delayed by an attempted coup. That following demonstrations beginning in October 2014 that drove President Blaise Compaoré from office, after he tried to extend his 27-year-old rule. Voters in Burkina Faso cast more than 53% of their ballots for the new president. Former Finance Minister Zephrin Diabre received 22%. The rest were split among 12 other opposition candidates. Many political observers say the free and transparent vote represents an important step towards consolidating the country's democracy. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari expressed his hope that the successful election ushers in a new era of true democracy and inclusive good governance in Burkina Faso. The United States commended Burkina Faso on the peaceful and orderly vote and her people for their commitment to defending the principles of democracy. Meanwhile, Samantha Power, the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, had a message for Rwanda's President Paul Kagame, who is supporting a referendum that could allow him to extend his presidency.
President Kagame has an opportunity to set an example for a region in which leaders seem too tempted, again, to view themselves as indispensable.
And with elections in February, Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni could extend his time in office to over 30 years. 60% of Burkina Faso's 5.5 million voters voted. Most had never known a president other than Blaise Compaoré. They've learned a popular movement can bring about rapid change and hold leaders accountable. Now, President Kabore must make good on his promises of economic growth, in part by making an historically dictatorial government more just. Paul Sisko, VOA News.
Thanks, Paul, for that interesting report. And before we begin today's discussion, let's go to Ouagadougou, the capital, of course, of Burkina Faso, where I'm joined by Eloise Bertrand, co-founder of Africa Research Evaluation and Analysis, or Area Consulting, that provides solutions to improve democracy and development in sub-Saharan Africa. Currently, she is a doctoral candidate at the University of Warwick in the United Kingdom. She joins us live via telephone link-up from Ouagadougou. Good evening, Louise.
Good afternoon, Shaka.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
I am terrific. Give us a sense of the mood on the ground, given, of course, the recent credible, perhaps, ever in the history of Burkina Faso?
Yeah, so, I mean, people here are very, very happy about how the elections have been happening. People are really happy about the fact that the results have been accepted by all the candidates, that the elections were really peaceful, because clearly there was worry about how they would happen, especially after the attempted coup in October. In September, sorry. And so that means that people feel really relieved, and they also feel very proud because Burkina is once again an example for the region of how we can really move forward in the right direction. And so people are really proud of that.
What would you say was perhaps the key to what some, in fact, characterizing as this magic electoral victory?
You mean for the rock victory or for the peaceful conduct of the elections?
For the peaceful conduct of the election and, of course, the eventual winner.
Yeah, no, I think that what made peaceful elections really possible is first that it was organized over the whole, over a year. It was really the main priority of the transition to organize those elections. And so a lot of means have been put into it in terms of human resources, in terms of money. There was also some new regulations for the campaign to try and have the campaign a bit fairer than before. Clearly, they have, like, the winning party has had a lot more money to spend than other parties, and that partly explains their victory. But the fact that there wasn't an incumbent, there wasn't someone who could actually use state money and state power and rely on state media to have a clear advantage, meant that the campaign was much more open than it ever was before, and that helped people to actually trust the results. A lot of people actually stayed, responding to a call by the Ballet Citoyen, which is a civil society organization. And so actually some people, after they cast their vote, they decided to stay in the polling station to observe by themselves, how the process was done, when the votes were being counted, to make sure that there wasn't any problem. And civil society has also greatly contributed to that by making by using several mechanisms to actually ensure that counting happened very fast. We had results 24 hours after the election, so it was very, very quick. So people really trusted the process.
If you followed what happened in Burkina Faso October last year, you would have expected that people, of course, would have been voting for change. And yet we know that Mr. Kabore, in fact, was an ally of Mr. Blaise Compaoré until January last year. Why did people vote for him? Were they, in fact, voting for a message or a messenger?
No, I think that, the insurrection in 2014 has been portrayed really as a bit like a revival of the Arab Spring, as people being fed up with the whole system and everyone linked to it. Where actually, I think people were mostly fed up with the willingness of Blaise to remain in power, or with his attempt to position his brother, who is really hated by a lot of people in Burkina, as his potential successor, later on. And so many people actually, especially the countryside, didn't really know why, Blaise went away last year. And so they just voted for the party that resembled the Compaoré's party, which was closest to the party. So the MPP, ROC's party, was really, the same personal, the same strategy, the same ideology, even if ideology is not something very, very important here. And so I think that was one contributing factor. And also, ROC, when he left the ruling party in 2014, he actually took with him a lot, a big network, a lot of influential people. And so that helped him as well to get elected now. And so I think that people are just also thinking that because he has so much experience in the government, he knows how things work, he knows the problem of the people, and he can, address those, and this time the people will be awake and they will be watching to make sure that he doesn't go back to old practices under the Compaoré regime.
So would it then be accurate perhaps to say that people really wanted continuity with the change at the top?
Yeah, I think that can be, we can say that, and clearly people, you know, are a bit afraid of having a more radical change, and maybe also the other candidates haven't done a great job or haven't had the means to really sell a different ideological, you know, society, for example, a different project. And so I think that clearly people really want to be cautious. They don't want to get, you know, to basically to go too far and then regret it. And I think that you can link that to, you know, the history of Burkina, where you had a lot of, you know, military regimes and many different things happening in the 80s, and the older generations remember that. And though young people are really, you know, claiming that, you know, they want to see, for example, a revolution like under Sankara, and I think a lot of people would want that, but then some people are, you know, a bit cautious about the negative aspect of it, that actually there are some really good things about it, but there are also risks, so they are a bit cautious.
Final question. You told me earlier that you're doing a PhD at Warwick, and in fact, the aspect that you're focusing on is hybrid regimes, particularly in Burkina Faso and Uganda. Yes. Why did you particularly choose those two countries, one in West Africa, former French colony, the other in East Africa, and a former British protectorate?
Yeah, well, exactly the reason why. It's because there are two very different countries with very different contexts and histories, and that, you know, that with very different characteristics. But at the same time, they can both be considered hybrid regimes. So Burkina Faso, until 2014, as now it's a bit unclear what kind of regime will be put in place, and Uganda still now under Museveni. And so I think it's by comparing these two regimes that I'm working specifically on opposition parties, so I can really look at how opposition parties position themselves in a specific context of hybrid regimes, as opposed to, you know, I mean, differently from democracies or really authoritarian regimes.
So from what you have been able to see, is there any way perhaps that Ugandans who are expected to go to the polls in February next year could perhaps borrow a leaf from Ouagadougou?
Well, I think that for now, Museveni seems to be, you know, headed for victory in Uganda, and there hasn't been such a level of propaganda mobilization. I think also Museveni has a much tighter grip on power and on the security apparatus. And my guess would be that if there is a real challenger in Uganda, it would be more within the party. So maybe, you know, someone, you know, will finally split from the party. But for now, they seem to be, you know, running as an independent. But there doesn't seem to be the same popular mobilization as in Burkina. But maybe later on.
So do you agree with some who would say that the process that is going on in Uganda is really not an election, but perhaps, in their view, a selection?
Definitely. I mean, there is a campaign going on, and so I think that it seems to be quite active. But yes, definitely, I think most people really know the outcome, and so there is not much, you know, suspense over who is going to win. And even if someone else was to win the elections, it would probably not be allowed to. So there will be something happening to make sure that Museveni wins.
Well, on that note, thanks a lot, Eloise, for your insight.
Thank you.
You're most welcome. Now we'll pause for a short break and would like to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is now on the social networking website Twitter, and we are tweeting live. Follow us at VOA Shaka, that's VOA Shaka, and join in on today's discussion with your questions and comments. Don't forget to use the hashtag VOA Burkina Faso or hashtag Burkina Faso. And we are still on Facebook. Just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa, become a fan, and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. We'll be right back with you, so please don't go away.
Let's take a quick look at the rocky road to democracy and new leadership in Burkina Faso. In 1980, President Lamizana is ousted in a coup led by Sai Zerbo. In 1982, he in turn is overturned in a coup led by Jean-Baptiste Ouédraogo following industrial unrest. In 1983, Captain Thomas Sankara takes power through another coup over Mr. Ouédraogo in an internal power struggle. He adopts radical left-wing policies. In 1987, Sankara is ousted and killed in a coup led by his close aide, Blaise Compaoré. In 1991, Compaoré is re-elected without opposition under a new constitution. In 1992, Compaoré's Organization for Popular Democracy Labor Movement wins a majority of seats in the first multi-party parliamentary elections since 1978. 6 years later, Compaoré wins presidential election by a landslide. In November of 2005, President Compaoré wins a third straight term in office. And in November 2010, Compaoré gains another term in office as president.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic.
It is the beat,
the African beat that counts.
It does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on the Voice of America. For more information, visit our website at www.voanews.com/African Beat.
Welcome back. Now joining us here in our Washington studios are two distinguished guests. Dr. Christopher Fomunyo, Senior Associate and Regional Director for Central and West Africa at the National Democratic Institute, or NDI, a non-profit, non-partisan organization working to support and strengthen democratic institutions worldwide. And Paul Sankara, brother of slain Burkina Faso President, Captain Thomas Sankara. He also serves as a member of the Committee Against Impunity in Burkina Faso, a group based here in the United States. Well, gentlemen, I have to say frankly that I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the two of you on Straight Talk Africa.
Well, thank you for having us. It's a real pleasure and to be on the panel with Mr. Sankara Paul. It's an honor for me too as an African.
It's really a pleasure. Paul, it's a pleasure to have you back.
Thank you.
Well,
in the name of the people of Burkina Faso.
You're most welcome. On a programming note, due to technical difficulties, we are experiencing here at the Voice of America headquarters in Washington, D.C. We will not be able to take your phone calls. We apologize for that. Let me come back immediately. Chris, you were on the ground. Once again, you had the opportunity to actually observe and witness another interesting election.
Yes, indeed. I was in Burkina Faso during the elections, and in one of my reports back to headquarters, I said, for once, I'm really relieved to witness a boring election.
What do you mean by boring election?
I meant that with a sense of humor, mm-hmm. But to say that the people of Burkina Faso really worked extremely hard to safeguard their elections and to safeguard the democratic process and deserve a lot of praise, a lot of credit for what they did and should be very proud of their accomplishments.
You also, of course, had the opportunity to witness another landmark election in Nigeria in March. How do you compare and contrast the two?
Yes, 2015 has been an interesting year for elections on the continent. And we've had some challenges, but we've also had some good elections, and Nigeria is one. And I think that the difference between the elections in Nigeria in March 2015 and Burkina Faso in November 2015 is that in Nigeria, there was an incumbent who was running as a candidate, whereas in Burkina Faso, there was no incumbent in the race, and it was a more open race. In Nigeria, there was a lot of suspense as to whether the election results would be accepted by both candidates and their supporters. And it turned out positively that the incumbent accepted defeat, congratulated his opponent, and the opponent was gracious in accepting victory. In Burkina Faso, the tension was more whether the elections would happen given the interruption of the military in the electoral process. Mm-hmm. And when the elections finally happened on the 29th of November, the two first candidates also conducted themselves very honorably. The winner, Mark Kabore, was very gracious in accepting victory. And the runner-up, Zephrin Diabre, was very gracious because he tweeted his concession and then went over to the political headquarters, the campaign headquarters of the winner, to congratulate him. And so we woke up on Monday morning, and everybody was very relaxed about the fact that the elections had gone very well, and the people of Burkina Faso really deserve a lot of credit for what they did.
What about you, Paul? You are a Burkinabe, a very proud Burkinabe citizen. Your reaction?
Thank you for having me for this show. But for and foremost, I want to pay a tribute for the martyrs, the victims, from October 2014 and September 2015. Without their sacrifice, I don't think we'll have an election this year through the transitional government. So it's, I would say, on top of any aspect that there is the victory of the people of Burkina Faso. Mm-hmm. And I hope that it will go forward and bring reconciliation, justice before, and address different issues like jobs for the youth and development for the country.
Would you agree with some pundits who have been saying that this perhaps has really to be perhaps the most credible election in Burkina Faso during your lifetime?
Absolutely. There is no doubt about it. That's the first time a civilian has been elected in Burkina Faso after the independence. So the electoral system itself, its view perceived by internal and external, has a credible one. Mm-hmm. There is a huge work that has been done once again by the civil societies, organizations, political parties, and the transitional government itself. So it's, yes, it was it is an example, and I hope it will help a lot of countries in the African continent to follow that.
To what extent would you sincerely say that perhaps this might very well be a game changer in terms of electoral politics of your country and perhaps the region for that matter? Or is it simply really a window of an opportunity?
No, I don't think it's just a sort of a short episode for in terms of political development in Burkina Faso or Africa. It's deeply rooted to what has been done since Thomas Sankara's time. And the best evidence about this point is that the youth in Burkina Faso, October 2014 and up to now, they call themselves the children of Thomas Sankara. Mm-hmm. The visions, the concrete realization, socioeconomic, and in a national standard that he has during his lifetime. So it's not just a flash, it's something really deeply rooted.
I know that, of course, your brother was revered. In fact, there are a lot of people who looked at him as a heroic figure, the sort of president that, in fact, Africa really needed. There are some people, in fact, who are making some comparisons with the new Tanzanian president, John Pombe Magufuli, who was seen today celebrating Tanzania's independence anniversary by, in fact, cleaning streets, neighborhoods, instead of whining and dining. Do you sincerely believe, for example, that the new president designate, Roch Marc Kabore, is the sort of person that would rise to the occasion to such an extent that, in fact, he may be the type of person that those young people you said who admired your brother can actually do business with?
I think the elected president in Burkina Faso, ROC, Christian Marc Kabore, and all the political parties, they are aware that there is no choice. The people of Burkina Faso is eager to protect and even strengthen the role and the place that they had since October, even before 2014. So having get rid of Blaise Compaoré after 27 years in the power, with all you know about what he has done, and also having put in jail the closest military key guy, Gilbert Diendéré, who attempted a coup on September 2015. No one cannot dream to try to manipulate the constitution or in order to extend his, the 2 terms if you have chance to be reelected. At the same time, we have to be vigilant because it's not the new elected president. I don't think really that we would wait for a deep revolutionary change, but we keep the statu quo, and he has to address some quite of a critical points. The justice in Burkina, in order to have a real and concrete, sincere reconciliation, and in terms of development, they have to do a lot of things for the youth and in terms of tackling the unemployment.
But Paul, how do you respond to some who will say, wait a minute, here is a man who was an ally of Blaise Compaoré until January of last year. Here is a man who was in fact president of Compaoré's ruling party. Here is a man who was vice president, was the prime minister, president of the assembly. Apart from the fact that, unlike Blaise Compaoré, has no military background, was a banker, what makes him tick, really? What makes him different and acceptable across the country?
Okay, it's probably the reason why the candidate of the party, MPP, has been elected. They have the experience. They had time to gather financial funds. They know the system. They have network, internal and external levels. The difference is, you mentioned that. That's one is civilians, Mr. Kabore, and the other one, former President Blaise Compaoré, is a military. But the key point, once again, is that it's a key turn of the political, socio-political history of Burkina Faso. Nothing cannot be like before. Chris, that's an evidence, that's something for sure.
Chris, is Paul perhaps being an optimist rather than perhaps being a realist? Do you agree with some of his analysis?
No, I think
as far as Mr. Kabore is concerned?
Yes, I agree with Paul, and Paul is right. Nothing will ever be the same in Burkina Faso, because even the newly elected president, Marc Roch Kabore, is aware of how much the people of Burkina Faso now feel empowered, because in a short space of 15 months, they have come out twice to safeguard their democracy. And it's a real sense of ownership of this process amongst the people of Burkina Faso. And so he knows that the honeymoon is probably going to be very short, because everyone is watching every step that he takes to be sure that it's within the spirit of what the population really wants for Burkina Faso now and in the future.
Very interesting. You know, there are people who say that when you have dictators, if I might use the concept here, like Blaise Compaoré in power, that what you have in place is security, peace, and stability. Is it really possible to have security, peace, and stability without having social justice and, well, accountability and reconciliation for that matter?
No, I don't think that it's possible. And I think that those people who espouse those views are taking a very superficial look at what pertains in many of those countries governed by autocrats, that there may be a semblance of peace because people are not killing each other in the streets, but deep down, the deep down grievances that people have that sometimes impede the country's ability to really project itself and to make sure that its resources are evenly shared to the benefit of all citizens. That's why when these autocrats fall, sometimes they fall overnight. Who would have thought that people would take to the streets and in the space of 24 hours, Blaise Compaoré was gone? And so, you know, where was the long-standing sense of security and stability? It wasn't really there. And I think that for it to be sustainable, it has to come from a sense amongst the citizenry that they're part of the governance process and that they count, because ultimately they're the ones who determine the leaders and they're the ones who can sustain security, development, peace, democracy for the long term.
So if, in fact, I understand you correctly, in 30 seconds, are you saying here that what we see in a country like Cameroon, Rwanda, Uganda, places like, there are a lot of places we can talk about, Angola and what have you, is not necessarily peace or security or stability because, frankly, that does not necessarily mean the absence of warfare.
I agree, and I say that very publicly, because if you have the opportunity to talk to many people in private, even people who are parts of these systems in the countries that you've talked about, they will tell you in private that they're not happy with the trends of governance in their respective countries, which means there is a problem. It's just that people may be too scared to speak out, but ultimately they're waiting for the moment when they will have their day and they will be able to express themselves. But I can guarantee you that deep down, people are not convinced that's the best they could have for their respective countries.
Thank you very much. You're tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment, but first here is Mariama Jaro. Take it away, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. Still to come, we'll reveal some of the outstanding feedback we've received from our audience through social media. But now, here is our letter of the week.
Ferdinand Rouge from Dar es Salaam in Tanzania writes, Burkina Faso has made an impressive political development, a first in the history of the country. Very few African countries have managed to conduct their general elections in a peaceful manner like Tanzania. For the first time, Burkina Faso respected her domestic laws and included election observers from other parts of the world. Congratulations to the people of Burkina Faso for ensuring a free and fair election.
Like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA.
Welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. Once again, it's time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter, Mariama. Take it away again, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. Burkina Faso's new president, Roch Marc-Christian Kabore, has done what seemed impossible. He convinced voters that he could bring fresh air to the West African nation, garnering a clear majority votes in the first round and ending massive protests to oust former president Blaise Compaoré, who stayed in power for 27 years. Well, this leads us to our question of the week, asking, what do you think were the key factors that enabled Burkina Faso to hold her first ever credible election? Well, thanks for using all our social media platform to communicate to us. Another reminder that we are tweeting live today. Just use the hashtag VOA Burkina Faso or hashtag Burkina Faso. And if you haven't yet, please follow us. Let's go to a tweet from Victor Kanyense of Lusaka in Zambia, who writes, vigilance on the part of the populace. They had come to maturity to watch over theirs like hawks. I say, well done, compatriots. Another tweet from G. Makata from Arusha in Tanzania says, what could be advanced there? It's only the growth of democracy within the Burkina Faso community. Well, let's move on to our Facebook followers and see what they had to say. And we'll go to Mohamed Ahmed Mansour from Freetown in Sierra Leone, who writes, I'd like to take this opportunity to congratulate the people of Burkina Faso for the peaceful, free, fair, and transparent election. Well done to the people of Burkina Faso once again. And this is a significant step towards democracy. Now that the election is over, please rally around the winner and move your country forward. Let there be a government of inclusion for a better Burkina Faso. Another comment comes from Anne Garrison. She's writing from here in the United States, she's writing from Oakland in California. She says, I'm surprised that they elected Compaoré's former prime minister. Interesting points made here. Shaka and Guess, your take.
Paul, your reaction, please.
Yes, it's quite an interesting point through this, the tweeters. First and foremost, don't forget something. It's very important to notice that the civil society's organization didn't do this job to take any position, official position. They still want to keep the role and the place that they have been playing since 2014. They didn't want to become a director or ministers. No, we want to be the watchdog to keep overseeing what's going on in the political arena and the development of the country. Yes, the new president and once again, all the different parties, political parties, they are aware that they don't have a choice except bringing, for example, Blaise Compaoré. He has to respond for the 27 years bloody crimes and economic crimes. It didn't happen suddenly for ex nihilo. And then we can effectively talk about reconciliations. And the third point is the trying to get some address the unemployment for the youth.
Mm.
So, yes, it's very interesting about these tweeters that we just said.
Interesting indeed. Mariama, do you have more reaction from the audience, please?
Indeed. We'll move on to a posting from Justin Moremi from Dar es Salaam in Tanzania, who posted this comment on our wall. Negative domestic factors ranging from corrupt rulers, repression, a colonial legacy, and insufficient political structures ironically thrust Burkina Faso into participatory democracy. This clearly demonstrates that Africa is not static, but is progressively adjusting to universal standards as far as governance is concerned. Kudos to the people of Burkina Faso for your political maturity. Another comment comes from Fred Toramiyomwe. I hope I said the name right. I think I got it right. He's writing from Kampala in Uganda. And he says, I think the desire by Burkina Faso to have a peaceful post-election country could be the motivation to have this type of election. The Electoral Commission in Burkina Faso must have been resolute to make sure that the country remains united and peaceful by announcing the results in a free, fair, and credible election. I wish the Ugandan Electoral Commission would take Burkina Faso's lead. Well, Shaka, and guess once again, your take on these comments.
Interesting, Chris?
Yes, very interesting indeed. And I have been very overwhelmed with the amount of support that the people of Burkina Faso have received from their fellow Africans across the continent, all of the recognition for their efforts are really inspiring. I should also say that when you look at Afrobarometer and a lot of the research work that's done across Africa, the percentages of Africans who continue to aspire for democratic governance continues to rise every year, even as they distrust some of their governments. And so the governments that are trying to sit tight or stay in place are really riding against the current of where Africans want to be in the 21st century. Thirdly, I would say that, you know, the prime minister, the president-elect, Margaret Kabore, even though he may have served as Kampare's prime minister at some point, is also his own man, because he broke away from Kampare at the time that mattered. And many people attribute the change that eventually happened to the fact that he was able to leave Kampare with a lot of followers, which weakened what was left of the ruling party, and that contributed. So there was a broad coalition all the way from young students at the university across the board to former members of the ruling party who bonded together to make sure that change could happen in Burkina Faso. And I think that's why he, after the he went through the elections and came ahead of the other candidates. But I think he's going to govern very differently from anything that Burkina Faso may have experienced during the Kampare years.
What about the contribution of the new demographic changes? And of course, we can also look and talk about the role of social media, which makes it very difficult for some of these autocrats to control the flow of information.
Exactly. You know, Burkina Faso traditionally, and I'm sure Paul would confirm, has always had very young activists, social activists. Even, you know, late President Sankara was a young man, you know, when he took over power in Burkina Faso. And this time around, the youth, there was that combination of youth and new technology that enhanced the ability to mobilize, to make sure the elections were organized in a transparent fashion. For example, we had a coalition, CODEL, a coalition that deployed well over 6,000 domestic observers across all of Burkina Faso, and a coalition that was able to do a parallel vote tabulation that was transmitting information in real time and was able to verify the elections that were the election results that were formally announced by the Election Commission. We also had another coalition, ICODE, that was a coalition of young people, just young students from the university, who used SMS technology to transmit information on what was happening across the country on Election Day. And finally, we had the Election Commission itself, the Independent Election Commission, which adopted new technology that allowed them to record, process, transmit, and announce the election results in 24 hours.
Interesting.
And so the slogan coming out of Burkina Faso now to every African country is, if Burkina Faso can do it in 24 hours, why can't you?
Wow. Well, we'll come to a little bit more of that. Thanks, Mariama, for bringing us this week's audience reaction.
Well, thank you to you and to our guests. That will do it for today's social media segment. Just a reminder that we appreciate all the feedback, whether it's in social media form or using other means to communicate to us. Please keep them coming. And if you are a new fan, just drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com, or post your comment on our Facebook page. Just enter the keywords, Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com, or you can join our YouTube channel. Sign up to VOA TV to Africa and follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. A reminder that the show is streaming live every Wednesday. Just go to the VOA Straight Talk Africa TV program page on our website, or simply watch us on your mobile device. Just download the VOA mobile app. Now, let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program.
Next week on Straight Talk Africa, Pope Francis recently took his message of religious tolerance to Kenya, Uganda, and the Central African Republic. We'll discuss interfaith solutions to combat religious intolerance and extremism. That's next week, right here on Straight Talk Africa.
A reminder that you are tuned in to Straight Talk Africa. We'll continue our discussion in a moment, so please don't go away.
Once again, let's take a look at the rocky road to democracy and new leadership in Burkina Faso. In 2013, thousands of demonstrators take to the streets over plans to create a Senate. Opposition leaders say the move will allow then-President Compaoré to extend his rule. In 2014, demonstrators across the country oppose possible plans by President Compaoré to prolong his rule. Defectors from the ruling party found a new political movement to challenge the president. In October of that same year, more mass protests against proposed constitutional changes to allow the president another 5 years in power turn into a mass uprising that drives President Compaoré from office. That same month, the military takes charge in a move condemned by opposition, civil society groups, the United States, and the African Union. On November 2014, an agreement is reached on a framework for a transitional government to run the country until elections proposed at the end of 2015. Political and military leaders choose former Foreign Minister Michel Kafando as interim president. In April of 2015, the interim parliament bars the politicians allied to deposed President Blaise Compaoré from running in the presidential and general elections planned for later in the year. In September of 2015, the acting president, Michel Kafando, faces down a coup attempt by presidential guard allies of former President Blaise Compaoré. In November of 2015, the former prime minister, Roch-Marc Christian Kabore, wins presidential elections comfortably, beating former economy and finance minister, Zéphrine Diabré.
We are able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique, and this gives me that inspiration to come to work.
This is Straight Talk Africa, coming to you live from Washington. You know, during the last 15 years that I have had the privilege of hosting this program, we have received a lot of emails and other means of communication talking about elections in Africa. What has really been a common denominator in the last 15 years is that most elections conducted on the African continent have not really been meant for the average African indigenous stakeholder. These elections have actually been meant or have been pandering to who they call development partners or the donor community. Would you say perhaps that this election in Burkina Faso about 10 years ago is probably one of those few across the continent that clearly was meant for the Burkinabe as opposed to the donor community?
I think above the electoral system itself, it's a question of dignity and taking control of its own development. And election, of course, democracy is part of it, this process. So, once we have to acknowledge something, set up an agenda, gather all the means, equipment, and tools before waiting for any contribution, external contribution. Otherwise, we don't have to be surprised that something wrong happened during the election because we don't have any control. Mm. As Brother Christian said, he was on the ground. Just with iPad and technology tools, the youth use it in the countryside in order to send the result, and that's why we have a credible outcome with this election. So it's not a rocket science, I think. And of course, it has sometimes a cost by trying to have a control of its own destiny. Mm. But there is no choice about it. Once you wait for outside, external donors or contributors to determine the way you should go for your own development, I think it's you plan to fail.
You plan to fail. Mm. Chris, is this a myth or is it in fact reality that there are perceptions really, which perhaps translate into reality really, that in most countries on the continent, and perhaps I can say from what I have seen, maybe less than 15 countries out of 54 actually do the right thing, something close to the needs of their people. But that the rest of the elections that have been conducted in these countries really have actually been for the beneficiary of the donor community, the development partners, as opposed to the primary stakeholder. You have observed a lot of these elections during the last 15 years yourself.
That's right, and probably during the last 20 years. So your observation is very pertinent, but things have evolved. They haven't evolved at the same pace. There's some countries that are still lagging behind, but there are a number of countries that have become accustomed to organizing elections that are meaningful elections for their own citizens. Mm-hmm. For example, the issue of citizen observers. There are some countries on the continent today that still impede, still make it extremely difficult for their own citizens to be able to deploy observers on election day and monitor their own elections. And I remember 20 years ago, some countries did not even allow domestic observers. And under pressure, they would allow international observers. Mm. But what we've seen now increasingly in Nigeria, in Cote d'Ivoire, in Burkina Faso, is that these citizen observers are organizing themselves to even conduct parallel voter tabulations that allow them to track the election results from each polling site, centralize their own counting, and then verify that the elections that are being announced by the election management body are actually a true reflection of what happened on election day. So there's been some progress, although there's still work to be done. And the work that has to be done in those countries is in those countries where leaders want to sit tight, where leaders want to change constitutions so they can perpetuate themselves in power. Those are the leaders that make it extremely difficult for their fellow citizens to participate and take ownership of the electoral process, as is the case with other governance processes as well.
You have lived in this town as long as I probably have too, and I'm sure when you hear about democracy and, you know, as of course it relates to Africa, you would almost think that perhaps the only few countries where there is no democracy in Africa is one, Zimbabwe, and probably Ivory Coast when Laurent Gbagbo was in power. But we do know, frankly, that there are a lot of countries on the continent. Look at Ethiopia, for example. Let's face it. You have the ruling party with a perfect score. I mean, there's not a single individual that represents the opposition. Even if you were Jesus Christ, my God, I mean, he is very much beloved. But there are people, frankly, who have problem with him. Are you telling me that we're having a perfect democracy in a country like Ethiopia, for example?
No, I couldn't say that with a straight face. You know, and it's not a laughing matter. Because we know that humanity, by its very nature, is meant to be diverse. And that there's no way that in a country with over 60 million people that everyone would speak with one voice. That just is not normal. And to have a parliament with over 435 seats, and all of those seats won by one political party, just doesn't make sense. I think these countries are beginning to stand out as anomalies, even on the continent itself, and their neighbors should be more vocal. They should give more meaning to the peer review mechanism. They should give more meaning to the AU charter, because the AU now has a charter on democracy, elections, and governance, which has the framework that allows people to be able to point fingers at these leaders that are not governing justly.
But the AU has no sovereign power, my friend. Power belongs to the states. I mean, look at their position as far as military coups is concerned. What about, for example, coming up with this policy of saying, you know what? If you are an incumbent president, you cannot have a constitutional change that benefits you. It should probably benefit someone else, but not you, really. Look at what is happening in the Republic of Rwanda. It looks like there is some sort of perfect democracy there. I mean, you are talking about a ruling party deciding to obviously change the constitution so that President Paul Kagame can stay in power. You are having the Senate, you are having the National Assembly, you are having the Supreme Court of the land. Everybody seems to say, to be in agreement. Is that humanly possible, really, even if you were as popular as Jesus Christ?
No.
Or is it possible, frankly, that there is a reason why people are not saying what is on their mind?
It's the latter. It's too perfect to be human. And it was kind of almost laughable when a government official said they had toured the whole country. I believe it was the Speaker of the National Assembly that said they had toured the entire country of Rwanda, and that in the entire country of Rwanda, there were only eight people who were not in favor of the constitutional change. It doesn't make sense. Nobody is fooling anybody else in today's world. And we should be honest to our fellow citizens to create an environment where, even if a country such as Rwanda has come a long ways, some of the gains that have been made could be consolidated. The institutions could be strengthened so that we don't have to all depend on one individual. Because at the end of the day, we're all human. Mm. And at some point in time, that one individual is not going to be there. And there's no system to allow people to renew the political leadership of their country or to allow their voices to be heard, then ultimately people are going, as normal human beings, they're going to look for other means to get their voices heard. And that's what contributes to the instability, to the poor management of resources that we suffer today in parts of our continent.
Paul, why is it that you have a lot of countries in Africa where incumbent presidents don't want to leave State House, really? They say sometimes that they don't want to leave because their people love them so much that they don't allow them to leave. And yet we know a man called the Madiba, Nelson Mandela, the first democratically elected president of the Republic of South Africa. This man, after one term, he decided to go home. The ANC didn't want him to leave, but he said, you know what? Thank you, but no thank you. I think I have done my part. I think there are a lot of other leaders in this country. Why is it that in some countries in Africa, for some reason, there are leaders who think they are indispensable, that without them, the country wouldn't be there, that they are God's gift to their countries? You have 20 seconds, please.
Okay, I think it's not just the person as a leader, president, incumbent, who wants to stay. It's a whole system. Around him, you have the family, biological and political families, and outside of his country, you have the link with the Western countries who want them to stay. But the grassroots have to take their power anywhere, without naming any country.
Unfortunately, time happens not to be our best ally. Before we go, we would be remiss if I didn't mention the passing of one of our colleagues, Samuel Mwangi Geita, who passed away at the age of 44 on November 26th following a car accident along Thika Road outside Nairobi. Besides serving as Voice of America's stringer for the Swahili service for over 15 years, Mwangi was a distinguished print and electronic journalist who had worked for The Nation newspaper, radio and Citizen Television, among other media outlets. He also worked as a public relations and media consultant for the Minister of Agriculture. He is survived by his wife Gladys and two children, Nima and John Geita Mwangi. May his soul rest in eternal peace. On that note, thanks to our distinguished guest, Dr. Christopher Fomunyo, Senior Associate and Regional Director for Central and West Africa, the National Democratic Institute, or NDI, and Paul Sankara, brother of slain Burkina Faso President, Captain Thomas Sankara, and a member of the Committee Against Impunity in Burkina Faso. Thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners. We thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning, it's Daybreak with James Bate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Africa. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.